Okay, business leaders, are you playing defense or are you on the offense? Are you just, excuse me, hey, I'm trying to talk business here. As I was saying, are you here just to play or are you playing to win? If you're in it to win, meet your next MVP, NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is your full business management system in one suite. With NetSuite, you're running your accounting, your financials, HR, e-commerce, and more, all from your online dashboard. One source of truth means every department's working from the same numbers with no data delays. And with AI embedded throughout, you're automating manual tasks, plus getting fast insights for your next move. Whether you're competing on your home turf or looking to conquer international markets, NetSuite helps you get the W. Over 40,000 businesses have already made the move to NetSuite, the number one cloud ERP.
Right now, get the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/special. Get this free guide at netsuite.com/special.
Okay, guys.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Bob Pompiani, sitting right across from me, and what a wonderful man he is. Is that a St. Patrick's Day theme, Bob? You're all dressed in green.
No, but it could be. I have a lot. I like green. Don't you like green? Green's a good color.
Love green.
And just so happened that I'm one of those guys, I got to match the hats with the color of the outfit, too. I just do. You know? I don't know why I think that way, but I do.
So you put more thought. Do you lay out your outfit the night before?
No, my wife does.
She lays out your outfit every
day. She takes care of everything.
Oh, my God.
I tell people, where to get your clothes? I say, off the bed.
I take the nearest clean thing. That's what I do in the morning. I go down, I take the nearest clean thing, usually.
Sometimes I just have clothes that are still lying on the side of my bed that I haven't put in my closet yet, and I'll be like, yeah, that works, whatever's on top.
Oh, believe me, I used to be like that. But she's very much into, you know, the appearance. And so I just,
love that.
I'm not going to, what am I going to do? I'm happy that she does it. It saves me a decision.
My wife wouldn't do that if I paid her a salary to do it.
I mean, no, it's because she hit you in the face the other day. That's
did you hear
why.
About that,
no,
Bob?
No, what happened?
Susie punched me in the face yesterday.
Too much golf?
No, I woke up early there because we were having furnace problems, and I was also having more blowouts.
What a bad time to have that.
Not good. I was also having more blowouts than the 07 Patriots. And then when I came back to bed, she either tried to pull the covers off of her toward me, so it was a kind gesture, but her hand slipped, and she cracked me right in the jaw at 3 in the morning.
I think that was probably intentional.
Right.
She but was, she kind of camouflaged it in that. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just trying
agree.
To stop having blowouts. Please go to bed and stop keeping me up.
That's been years coming, I think. And finally, I got cracked right in the jaw. It was actually very funny. And then I did get the furnace fixed yesterday, Limits.
What a bad time to have that happen.
Oh, my gosh. It wasn't good at all. It was going off and on. I thought we were going to be more frozen than Justin Fields when he came in to throw that pass against the Browns, Bob. Anyway, you well?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm very well today. I feel good. I have a Saints hat on, as you can see.
New head coach, who's going to be? I think it's going to be Mike McCarthy.
How about, well, we're going to get to our six-pack in a moment here, and we'll include that in it. Limits, I assume you're well.
I'm doing wonderful, guys.
You look wonderful. Then
I feel wonderful, even though it was -4 degrees when I went outside this morning.
Oh, wow. It's the coldest day yet.
It's you're the coldest always, since 2015.
Your picture should be next to the phrase, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. Shouldn't it be, Bob? Look at him in
Plus,
there.
Plus, he was working last night. He's a man of many jobs.
He's hopping around like the Easter Bunny, happy from one trip.
That's a great phrase.
From one trip to the next. I've never seen a happier man. Have you?
That's good. That means he loves his job.
Now I'll be playing hoops tonight, Bob.
Where's that?
In our local Baldwin gym that we grew up playing in.
Man, would I love to play.
Me and my buddies that we all played grade school with together.
If I didn't fear for my life, I would get out there and play. All right, let's go. I'm sorry. The six-pack. Let's do the six-pack. There's number one right there. Bob, Ramon Foster with some very interesting stuff on the Football and Podcast, and it was tremendous. I'll preface it with this, and I've said it many times on here. I did not have Ben pegged as a guy who would stay in the limelight, which he absolutely is. And the real beauty of it is he still gets the first word after a Steeler game before the coach does, which he used to do on this station. But in this case, of course, the season is over. You were on his Football and Podcast. I think it's a tremendous show, don't you?
I think he's been bitten by it, too. I think Spence, his sidekick, does a great job. He has all the technical stuff available down there in his basement, and it's his way to stay involved. And I would have thought the same thing. I would have thought maybe he'd try it and, you know, too much.
Yeah.
I think he really likes it now, to the point where he can take it on the road, and he likes bringing, you know, guests on and just kicking it with whatever the topics may be. And he's done a really good job.
He has. And the opinions, he's not afraid to put an opinion out there. Mm-hmm. I think he should do it more unqualified. Like, a lot of times he's like, yeah, people ridicule me for this, or I probably shouldn't say this. No, just let it fly. Pretend you're in an empty set with Antonio Brown, Martavis Bryant, Heath Miller, Le'Veon Bell.
Drawing up those plays in the sand and in the dirt, like you always like to talk about. Do it that way. Just go
and sling it. And they talked about that during this podcast. We're going to play parts of it later on. But the newsy thing that came out of it is Ramon Foster, and I want to be clear about this. He didn't say he advocated firing Tomlin. In fact, he said, "I'm a Mike T guy." What he did say, and I'll quote Ramon here, is we're talking about Coach Tomlin. I'll put it this way. This is my opinion. I didn't want him fired, but I also thought this. If there was a year to move on, I thought it was this one, considering the circumstances. 5 straight losses, another first-round bounce. Offense looked anemic. But you still have some bones. If you have a guy in mind that you wanted to bring in, I don't know who that guy is. If there was a year to move on, this was the one from Ramon. And I feel that's why the first.
I disagree with that. I thought, as I told you last week, it should have been last year.
Yeah.
If you're going to make that play, because once you give a 3-year extension, you're not going to go back and rescind it or try to.
Well, you didn't have to give the extension.
That's what I'm. No, but last year was the time with 1 year left.
Sure.
That's what I'm saying. You could have just let it play it out. At this point now, you'd be in a situation with no contract.
Right.
And you could have figured out whatever you wanted
Absolutely.
To do. So that's why I said that last week to you, because I thought that was the prudent play in terms of, but whatever the reason, they wanted him to stay, and they gave him a 3-year extension, a lot of money. So
no, well, it was.
I wouldn't have expected it now. I would have expected it last year.
Well, I don't expect it ever. I wouldn't have expected it last year, this year, next year, or the year after that. I never expect it, but I for the first time after this season, I advocated for moving on from Tomlin. You didn't advocate for it at this time last year, though. You weren't saying they should move on from Tomlin.
No, but
you were saying
I was
no
saying
extension.
Keep your options open.
Yes.
That's all I was saying. Keep your options
Certainly
open.
Certainly not
Don't
a 3-year extension.
I didn't think there still had, you know, it's just like you're going to find yourself in George Pickens. You're not going to extend him, I don't think. You have 1 year left. You let him play, if that's the case, if you can't figure out a trade. And then at the end of it, you figure out what you want to do.
Here was the interesting thing from the podcast. Neither Ramon nor Ben, when this topic arose between them, said, oh, absolutely not do you move on from Tomlin. Neither one of them came close to saying that. Neither one said, this guy's been, you know, the typical party line or the apologist line of a string of non-losing seasons, all that crap. In fact, Ben wondered out loud, you know, what it would be like to say. One of the two said, maybe it was Ramon, the problem is they haven't sucked enough. One of them said that. And that's true. They're living in this land of high-end mediocrity.
Yeah, that was Foster that said that.
Yeah.
And you don't put yourself in a position, if it is quarterback you're looking at, you kind of take yourself out of the conversation by drafting where they draft every year.
I mean,
that's just typical of how the quarterback game is played.
Absolutely. And we're going to play parts of that later because it was fascinating stuff. Some really fun stories, too, between those guys, Ramon and Ben. Next. The Baseball Hall of Fame, Bob, and I'm more interested in the guys that didn't get in rather than the guys that did, namely Manny Ramirez and A-Rod. Manny now has just one more year left on the ballot, and his percentage is barely moving. It's again back to the old steroid conversation. And also, I'm interested in the idiot who left Ichiro off his ballot. One guy.
I wonder if it's the same guy who left Griffey off his ballot. There was one vote against Griffey, too.
There was one vote against Jeter.
How? Maybe it's the same guy.
I don't know. You think it's Ron? I'm kidding. I'm kidding on that one.
Ron still votes, yes or no?
He called you an idiot. I'm not calling him an idiot. You called him an idiot.
I never called him an idiot. That is a...
Yes, you did, Bob.
No, I didn't. I called his whatever subject was an idiot.
So CC Sabathia, Billy Wagner, and Ichiro get in. Some idiot leaves Ichiro off the ballot. And this gets to the nature of the problem that also relates to keeping the steroid guys out, which is so much of this is anonymous, and it absolutely shouldn't be. It should be as transparent as a piece of cellophane, Bob. Do you like that line? I just thought,
is cellophane
transparent?
Yeah.
Pretty much, right?
You see right through it, sure.
You can see right through it. That guy should have to come forward, sure. And he should be immediately have his vote stripped, and everybody should. And I give Ron credit. As much as I disagree with Ron's take on this every single year for keeping these people out, at least he puts his name out there and tells you who he did and didn't vote for. That I can respect.
Most of the time didn't vote for.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right. I mean, if you're not going to vote for Ichiro, then who could you vote for?
Right.
I mean, there's nothing that you've watched from him that indicates anything other than he should have been a slam dunk unanimous first ballot, which he wasn't, and he should have been.
What would solve all of this is removing the morals clause. As I've said many times, I know a lot of sports writers. I am one. And they're one of the last classifications of people on earth who should be imposing their morals on other people. What did you do on the field?
Right.
Tell me that.
Simple.
Now, if we get to an extreme case like a murderer or something, then we can deal with that when it rarely comes up. Other than that, I don't care for you to impose your morals on baseball players.
If you're allowed to play.
Yes.
And all these guys were allowed to play. And not only that, baseball encouraged them to play because it was a cash cow.
Right.
So therefore, if you're allowed to play, you didn't violate anything apparently. The league saw no problem with putting you out there. Therefore, you should be judged on what you did. I don't care the circumstances. Yeah. Barry Bonds should have been in long ago and should be in a unanimous
Roger
selection.
Clemens too. Clemens, maybe the best pitcher A-Rod, and player ever.
Maguire, Sosa, all of them. Put them in.
Because we're also talking about a sport that...
And that extends to Pete Rose, by the way. And I judge it by what he did as a player.
I agree. And it's a sport that cheating is just part of the game. You know, it's basically the name of the sport is baseball, and then in parentheses, cheating. Mm-hmm. Baseball cheating. Their cheating dared to threaten these hallowed numbers records that all these sports writers hold in such esteem. And that's why those were the guys that were singled out. Buster Olney said it well. The great irony here is that the morals clause was imposed by a known racist named Kennesaw Mountain Landis. So here's what Olney said today. And I quote, Manny Ramirez, who has just 1 year left on the ballot, and his voter percentage isn't moving at all. In 2020, Olney says, the Baseball Writers Association of America removed Kennesaw Mountain Landis's name from the MVP award because of his long history of racism. And yet a huge portion of the voters continue to apply Landis's character clause for steroid era candidates. Do these guys know whose clause they're imposing here? And he says, only does, as far as the ballot is concerned, Ramirez is in good standing like everybody else, but a lot of writers won't let him into the hall, despite some evidence that PED users have already been inducted. Of course they have. So have spitballers, so have drunks and drug users and womenizers and everybody else in the history of baseball, okay? All any category you want to pick, they're in. But we'll keep the steroid guys out because they threatened our hallowed numbers records or broke them. The whole thing is sickening. I vowed 2 years ago I'd never write about it again, and I won't.
No, I mean, I only talk about it every year at this time, and we're talking about who didn't get in and who didn't vote for Ichiro or someone who is a lock. And it's just so simple. It is so simple. You're allowed to play, judge him on what he did on the field. That's as simple as it gets. You don't have to worry about any outside stuff. I'm not concerned.
Thankfully, and finally, at least Dave Parker is part of this class, and I think
it took way too long.
Yeah, I agree. Next. Boy, thank you, Limits. This has been delicious so far. Did you see Dan Hurley last night, Bob, berating an official in their win over Butler? And on camera, you could hear Hurley telling that official, don't turn your back on me. I'm the best coach in the blankin' sport. I'm the best coach in the blankin' sport. And then he has the nerve afterward to say, I wish they would put other coaches on camera more. These other coaches losing their minds at the officials. I see other coaches as demonstrative as I am. Sorry, Dan. You're the most demonstrative college basketball coach I've ever seen, to the point where sometimes, while I love his passion and have great respect for him as a coach, and he might be right about that, that he is the best coach in America.
He might be right.
He's unbelievably obnoxious, is what he is. And if
he's not the first coach. I mean, if you say...
I haven't seen many like him, Bob.
Well, I go back to Bobby Knight.
Okay. You want to? Yes. I mean, all right. Then that's the apt comparison.
Right. I mean,
and if you're Bobby Knight or Hurley and you're surprised that the cameras are on you during the game, you're being awfully
normally, that's a compliment.
There.
They put it on you because you are as successful as you are. So just deal with it. Yeah, that comment was ridiculous. I saw that and I think it was.
But I do.
Mean, come on.
He did add to give him credit for this, but the camera. Obviously, I've created this for myself, he said. I'm not the victim. Good for him for saying that. You're not the victim. The way you act, I've never seen anything like it. He's like, you know how Jamie sometimes goes on the court to play defense? That's Hurley, but in a way more obnoxious way. His histrionics.
As good as he is.
Is that the right word, Limits? Histrionics, like demonstrations?
Yeah, we'll roll with it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's a word. That's a good word, actually.
Yeah, a great word, yeah. I think.
No, but he's a wonderful coach. It's just that you don't have to tell anyone about it every time there's a call that goes against you.
Yes. Limits. You made us wait for that one, Bob.
That must be a really good beer.
Caught me off guard.
The Penguins' next four games are Anaheim, Seattle, San Jose, and Utah. It's a little trip through the dregs of the league. Listen. There's only six teams in the whole NHL with a worse points percentage than the Penguins, and you have three of them right there. Three of them.
But two of them beat the Penguins in Pittsburgh.
Well, that's getting to my point here. The only team in the East with a worse points percentage than the Penguins is the Sabres. So if they don't take three of four at least, and what if they go 0-4 or 1-3? Man, I get closer and closer to the point, Bob, of... We've all been wondering when the Penguins will reach bottom. They're there. The Buffalo Sabres are the only team in the East with a lower points percentage. It just might be time. We'll see how these next four games go. But man, to me, they're almost doing us and everybody else a favor by sinking to the bottom before anybody thought they would get there. If I'm Kyle Dubas, but more importantly, Fenway Sports Group, I'm getting real close to saying, you know what? We didn't mean to get here this early, but we're the Titanic. So start shipping guys out and let's start approaching guys about their no trade clauses.
Well, that's
let's approach Sid about what he wants to do. We're there.
However, I was encouraged by their game the other night against the Kings. That's one of the best defensive teams in all of hockey, and the Penguins have beat them twice now. And the way they did it, I thought, again, looking at it from where they had just been on the East Coast, played back-to-back games, one day off, travel all the way across the country, lose Rickard Rakell to not playing, and they somehow won efficiently against that team.
I know. They have outlier games against Edmonton and the Kings.
I understand they need to have
a string.
I'm trying to support your argument here. They need to go 4-0 on the next four. That's how I look at this. They need to win every single one in regulation.
Yeah.
And if they do that, then they're going to tell the world that they're not done yet, and we'll see where it takes them. It may not take them far, but it could take them. And Kyle Dubas, if this happens, would be in another tough situation, as he has been since he got here. If this happens, what are they going to do? Then all of a sudden they moved up into a playoff spot, and you're going to tell these guys on your team who are veterans, we're just going to dismantle you now. I mean, that would be hard to do, given how those guys perceive themselves as still looking to win a championship.
Yeah, well, that gets us to our next topic. City dweller? That's the Washington Capitals. Greg Wyshynski on ESPN. You know, I've been curious about this and have read a little bit about it, but he really broke it down. How are the Capitals doing this when they, 10 minutes ago, it felt like, were in the exact same position as the Penguins? Yeah. Well, many ways. They have continuity in their executive offices with their GM, assistant GM. Guys have moved up and down, but it's pretty much the same guys, same philosophy that it's been for years. They have targeted 20-something players in trades. They made a big trade for Pierre-Luc Dubois when people thought he was just a chronic underachiever. They saw he was being misused out in L.A. and were willing to pay a big amount of money for him. They went out and got a goalie or two. They hired a younger coach, fired a guy who's won a cup elsewhere in Peter Laviolette. All of that, they've drafted well, all of that. But they also had something going for them that the Penguins didn't, Bob. And that is two of their high-priced veterans, Backstrom and Oshie, went on long-term IR.
Like creating money.
Tons of money. Tons of millions of dollars.
Tampa 2, baby.
That they freed up. And they admitted that they would have had to go in a different direction if that didn't happen. I don't see anything, underhanded about that, do you?
No, it's you can do that. That's the way it's stated. Now, you can adjust that rule if teams think that's an unfair advantage that you're doing it. Tampa does it a lot. And all of a sudden, guys, at playoff time, when all that ends.
Well, theirs is very different. Like, if there's some question whether a guy should be on long-term IR, Oshie and Backstrom were destroyed by injury. And I think if that happens to a team, maybe they should put a dateline on it when a guy can go on long-term IR. But I think you absolutely should be able to use that money to go out and help your team if Sidney Crosby goes on long-term IR. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree with that.
But here are the Capitals going out there and getting young guys. What they have is a bunch of good young players. They find Dylan Strome as a cast-off from Chicago because they didn't want to tender him. Things like that. It's just a good team up and down with a good coach, good organization. But they also got lucky. They also got lucky by freeing up all that money, you know?
Well, sure. And if you can do that and you spend it the right way, Logan Thompson's been their goaltender. He has been terrific. They were creative about what they did. This kid McMichael, who's all of a sudden a no-name into a big name for them. He's been very good about goal scoring. They've sprinkled in homegrown picks with people they've signed. Like you mentioned, Dubois, a lot of people thought that was a bad move, and here it is turning out to be a good one for them. So there are a lot of things working for them right now. For me to sit here, and I'm sure you feel the same way, and to say that the Washington Capitals have the best record in all of hockey, if I had told you that at the beginning of the year, you would have said, what are you on, right? There's no way that happens, given
President's
where they are.
Trophy. It's unreal.
They're the same as the Penguins. They're an older team. You figure it's coming to an end. They still have Ovechkin playing for them, and yet here they are.
Next, Patrick Mahomes defending himself and his team after Twitter erupted like Mount St. Helens the other day with the officials again appearing to side with Mahomes and the Chiefs, protecting him at all costs. And the second one where two Texans players crashed into each other above Mahomes, not on him. And even Troy Aikman, who's normally, asleep, well, not asleep, that's unfair, but lifeless would be fair. He springs to life like Frosty the Snowman, like Malzy the Snowman, and starts ripping the officials on this play. Here's what Holmes said about it. The one that everybody's talking about where I fell down, it's like I was just trying to get out of the way of getting smoked by the defensive lineman running in. So I'll try to keep doing that and not take those hits because that's the smart way to play the football game. Well, that ticks me off, Bob, because Mahomes knows what everybody else in the league knows, and that is that he baits people into doing that and creates more danger for him and for other quarterbacks around the league because people look at that, oh, you're going to go out of bounds and then turn it back in? Oh, you're going to flop to try to get penalties like you've done multiple times? You know what, then? We're just going to take our shots, and maybe we'll get lucky, like the guy in the interception return in the Lions game the other night who decapitated Jared Goff and didn't get a penalty, like the Bills defender who tackled Lamar Jackson 10 yards out of bounds and didn't get a penalty.
And in
let's
both
just
cases,
take our
if
shots.
That were Mahomes, they would have been called.
And I blame Mahomes partially for what happens to other quarterbacks because guys look at it and say, you want to pull that crap? We're going to take our best shot.
Well, he's also smart enough to know, and I give him credit for this in a way. It's almost like players in hockey who draw penalties. They know how to do it, and you get away with it. And you know, again, you're trying to get a competitive advantage. If that helps you, fine. I get what he's trying to do, but you're right. Once you do what he did on the one where the two Texans collided and he was underneath and they called that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You now are baiting people and you're running. You're no longer
yes.
a protected quarterback. You are somebody who should be hit hard anytime, fairly, unfairly, whatever.
Is replay assist on that?
Where's replay assist on Goff? I looked at that and I'm saying, I saw where he got hit. I wasn't totally sure it was in the face, but on the replay it was. Knocked him out of the game. Replay assist, if you have it, that's where you assist it. Plays like that.
I'm telling you, by implementing replay assists, the NFL has opened itself up to all kinds of allegations of favoritism and things like that. So you're just going to randomly pick plays to look at again and either overturn or implement. You're out of your minds. Can they implement a flag or can they just overturn one on replay assist, by the way?
I don't know. I don't think...
Can they say, like on the Goff one, could they say, hey, we saw something you didn't?
I'm not clear on that rule, but I'm telling you, if they're using it, use it for everything. All they have to do is get in the guy's ear and say, how many times have you seen a flag thrown? Oh, we'll pick that up, and there's no foul on this play.
Right.
That's them telling him.
That should have been the second Mahomes one.
If you're going to be willing to pick up a flag, then you should be willing to throw one and go back and say, we have a call. That on the field, we didn't see it, but we still have a call. Everybody knows what's going on.
Well,
just use the system. If the system is there for you, use it.
Right. And then there was the flop, which really, really enrages me. It enrages me. I don't watch soccer, but on the rare times I've done that.
Well, all you have to do is watch the NBA. You'll see plenty of flops.
It's always enraged me in basketball, starting with, you know, Duke made their program basically theme about taking BS charges, which is one of the reasons I couldn't stand them my whole life. And in the NBA, yes, it's always happening. It gets worse, this crap. But he did say this about Mahomes did. Remember the one the other day where he flopped on his way out of bounds?
Yeah.
He did say, I'd say the only one I felt like I probably did too much was the one on the sidelines where I didn't get a flag. You shouldn't have gotten a flag. And the ref saw it and didn't throw a flag. And I understood it immediately, Mahomes said. And know that I probably shouldn't have done that. Well, thanks a lot. But you also said in that quote that you think you should have gotten a flag. Right. And by the way, when a call goes against you, like the offensive offside last year, remember that in the Buffalo game when Kelsey did the throwback and it was sort of a BS call maybe? Mahomes bitched to Josh Allen in the post-game handshake. You remember that, Bob? Once a call goes against them, and what does he do? He brings it to Josh Allen after the game while he's shaking his hand. I can't stand this team. I can't.
You made that clear the other day.
I wrote about it
today.
They're
insufferable.
Aren't they?
With Mahomes going, that's just terrible. The refs who have Chiefs t-shirts on underneath their uniforms didn't give us a call against Josh Allen. It's horrible. I mean, really? Can't lose with class at that point. All the winning that they've done.
I know. I can't take it anymore, Bob. And I wrote,
well, that's why you don't have to worry, because your Buffalo Bills are going to go in there and win that game on Sunday.
Yes, they are.
They are going to win, Joe.
No, they're not.
Yes,
they are. Like a man whose Twitter handle is @NotKennyRogers.
And they are going to play the Philadelphia Eagles, and it's going to turn into Trubisky versus Pickett after two injuries to both star quarterbacks. And then the Trubisky train will reemerge here on Monday.
Can you imagine that? If it's Trubisky in the Super Bowl, I'm going
there. And Pickett.
How
about those two?
Oh, a man with the memorable Twitter handle @KennyRogers, or @NotKennyRogers, I should say, 2 days ago tweeted, the Buffalo Bills were just called for roughing the passer next week against Kansas City. It's the Trubisky train!
There was no doubt about it.
Did you know Lanny Fratteri? Do you know him Bob? Wonderful man, isn't he?
I used to go and speak at some of his classes, and he was terrific during his tenure as broadcaster, and I see him up at the club golfing a lot. He's a big golfer, too.
He just recently retired, Bob. Did you know that from Waynesburg?
That's right.
You know
Limits has a long history with Lanny up there. All these guys
Well, congratulations on a long career. And now he can just play golf with Jim Leland every day. And if you want me in your group, Lanny, I know you're going to have to give me strokes. I keep track of what's going on.
Me too, Lanny.
And Lanny wants me to broadcast you guys playing golf. He wanted that last summer, but I had to go to an event.
That would be tremendous.
So we will set that up.
Well, we have multiple opportunities here now because of Joe's ability to throw it out there, and people listen and then text me and want to set you up.
Somebody texted me and wants to invite you guys out golfing.
Who was the guy? There was a guy.
Who?
Kyle.
Kyle.
Kyle who?
I have Kyle's information.
You have Kyle's information.
What club?
That's at Grandview? Is that what it is?
It might have been.
That sounds delicious.
Now.
See, the problem is, Bob, now I'm getting a lot of people saying, oh, yeah, can you and Bob come out? And if I don't have you, then just me is a profound disappointment for everybody.
No, that's not true.
It is.
That's not true.
I'll play. I'm going to try this year to play more golf.
They see me as an avenue toward you. I'm being used.
But well, so what? You get a golf out of it. What's the difference? I've been used before. I'll take that if I can get on a golf course.
Read at postgazette.com my column this morning, if you would. Are the Kansas City Chiefs the most hated team in American sports history? We compare them to the Patriots, of course, who are probably, at least for people, you know, 40 and under, are probably the best competition there. But there's a lot to why I think the Chiefs may have surpassed them. We can get into that later as well, Bob. Man, do we have a lot to talk about. A member of the Rooney family may have given away the overall organizational philosophy on keeping Mike Tomlin around. This was a very interesting interview. We're going to hear from the general coming up next.
Wow.
On the Skeens card. I want to know all about what he thinks of this 11-year-old out in L.A. finding the Skeens card. Oh, give me one more, Limits, if you might. Well, why, thank you. Clip of Lamar Jackson on The Last Hard Knocks. I like Lamar Jackson. I think he's a really classy guy. You know, he went up to Josh Allen, and Josh Allen came up to him, and they had a really nice exchange after the game.
They beeline to one another.
Had to be maybe the most crushing defeat of Lamar's career, but also Hard Knocks showed Lamar going up to Mark Andrews on the bench after the game and saying, it's not you, it's all of us, we're a team. It was just really, I think he's a likable, classy guy. I really like him.
I do, too.
I do.
Which is why I think they're in a great position, even though they keep having these, you know, postseason failures. They have their quarterback for a lot of years.
Yeah.
And he is soon, I guess, to be a three-time MVP, even though I am torn on that. I think Josh Allen is probably in a position where he should get it this year or whatever.
Yeah.
But they have that's the one advantage, and that's the big difference between where the Steelers are and where they are.
Well, that and a few other things. And the idea of Steelers fans or people or players like Patrick Queen dunking on the Ravens for losing. Here's the big difference. The Ravens win playoff games. They've won as many, I think, in the last 3 or 4 years as the Steelers have in the last 14. So they win playoff games lately. They went through a long drought. And they're competitive, and everybody knows they belong at the party. You know,
right.
The Ravens are a real threat. They were in the AFC title game last year, lost by a touchdown to a dynastic team. They went to Buffalo this year. Great game, lost at the end. They deserve criticism for a lot of this, but that's very different than saying they belong in the same realm as the Steelers. The Steelers are playoff imposters that nobody takes seriously and have very little hope for next season. The Ravens absolutely belong at the party. Everybody knows they're a threat. Nobody goes on television and says they quit during a game like Kirk Herbstreit did of the Steelers. And everybody knows they're going to have one of the two or three best odds going into next season to win the Super Bowl. So please, enough with the comparisons, and especially the gall of Patrick Queen to take a shot at the Ravens after the performance of that defense in Baltimore.
No question.
One of the most embarrassing
postseason
history.
You have no business saying anything
for the Steelers
about anything.
Yeah.
Because the last five games were some of the worst defensive performances of the entire season.
Welcome back to Pomp and Joe. Man, are there a lot of storylines today? The 33rd team, which is a really good football site, put out a George Pickens trade proposal. And Doug Whaley and Doran had a very interesting reaction to it. We talked about Ramon and Ben. There's several different topics with those guys. One, the leadership or lack thereof within the Steelers offensive room in particular, and some interesting comments on the coaching. But right now we get to our friend George Michalowski of Pittsburgh Sports Now. He covers Pitt basketball. The general is warming up in the bullpen. We're going to talk to the general about this Skeens card that this 11-year-old found, the one of one. Apparently there were several Skeens cards that are worth some money. I want to get the general to sort that out too. But this 11-year-old kid found the one of one. What would you do out there if you got that? Would you consider the Pirates offer? of, what is it, Bob? What is it?
30 years of torture, essentially.
I know, 30 years of Pirates games. Is that a threat or a promise?
Behind home plate, though.
I know.
Yeah, that's cool.
You get a closer look.
That's a wonderful place to be, I can tell you that. But, no, I mean, I think that's fine, except it has a lot more to it.
You get Skeens jerseys, you get... You get to play a softball game.
You get to sit in the suite with Livy Dunn.
You get to play a softball game at PNC Park, which for limits here would be a wiffle ball game.
There's a cash component to
this. No, I know. I'm going for the cash.
Yeah.
George, how about you? What would you do if you found this ball or card?
Yeah, I go for the cash. I mean, I'd want to reach out to Paul before I reach out to the Pirates. I don't have enough respect for what the Pirates are doing right now to take up their deal right away. That's for sure.
Well, let's move to Pitt basketball for a moment. I asked you this question last week, and you were rather definitive in your answer. I said, do you still have Pitt as an NCAA tournament team? You said yes. They haven't won since we spoke. Do you still have Pitt as an NCAA tournament team?
Joe, I do. I do. I know it pains people to hear that. But
no, I think people are happy to hear. It doesn't pain anybody. I'm just surprised. They've lost four in a row, and they're sitting here at 3-4 in the conference, and not a very good conference.
Right. Well, you look at what their resume looks like, and I know it's hard to see that right now, that big picture, because they've lost four in a row, but their worst loss of the season is Clemson, which is hard to believe. It's the only quad two loss that they have, and it's barely a quad two loss. If Clemson moves up one spot in the net rankings, that's a quad one loss. So the people that are deciding on who makes the tournament aren't looking at Pitt right now as, like, out of the tournament, as a bad team. They're looking at Pitt like, okay, this is a good team that's on a skid. They'll have to turn it around. I mean, look, if they lose this Saturday against Syracuse, my answer changes. Like, that's a must-win game. It's on the road. It's at the Carrier Dome. I think it's now the JMA Dome, whatever. It's not going to be an easy game. The only positive stat working in Syracuse's favor this year is defensive rebounding. They've got some four forwards, are four of their top five scorers. So Pitt's going to be tested. They've got to win this game on Saturday. But as of now, I think they're in the tournament right now. And I think if they win, you know, the majority of their games going forward, you know, and win the ones that you have to win, like this Saturday, I think they're in.
Bobby Tollywoggled here. He's right. I'm looking at Bracketology on ESPN. The last four in is Pitt. This man knows where he speaks.
I met George the other day, was happy to do it at that Clemson game, and that was a disappointing game with these slow starts, number one, but also I thought in overtime, opinion watching it, there was no rhyme or reason to any of their offensive sequences. It was just give the ball to Jalen Lowe and let him shoot threes. That's not, to me, a winning way of playing offense in a game like that.
I agree with you, Bob. It was great to meet you, and it was tough to watch that overtime. Like, down the stretch, Jalen Lowe, I mean, the shots that he was taking were from Blake Hinson range, and they were sometimes too early in the shot clock and most of the time too late. They were waiting till the clock would run down. So their problems have snowballed. I don't think that's Jalen Lowe's fault. I think this team, and I wrote about this after the game, I think this team is lacking a volume three-point shooter. They had Greg Elliott 2 years ago. They had Blake Hinson the last 2 years. They don't have anyone this year that I believe opposing teams are scared of from outside. Zach Austin is 29th in the ACC in three-pointers attempted per game. Jalen Lowe is the leader, but he's only shooting 28%. So Jalen Lowe and Ish Leggett have been forced to take incredibly difficult shots with the way that Pitt's offense is playing and opposing teams are defending them. They can just pack in inside, force Jalen Lowe to take tough threes at the end of the shot clock, and win games. Pitt hasn't won. In their last four games, Jalen Lowe and Ishmael Leggett are 36 for 102 from the field. That is a lot of dang basketball shots, and they're not making a lot of them.
George, had it been a dream of yours to meet Bob?
Oh, Jesus.
It had. Hey, anyone that's sitting courtside is royalty, man. It was great to shake his hand.
Well, I was very happy to meet you because it's, you know, you read your stuff, and I hadn't had a chance to see you, but I was glad you came up and we chatted, and I think I agree with a lot of what you say about this team, and I do agree that this game on Saturday is a must win.
Limits?
George, Damian Dunn is back, but feel like the Panthers really haven't felt his impact yet after coming back from injury, no?
So I actually disagree with you in part. I think in that second half he came out hot. He had looked like that hand, that thumb was still bothering him before that. I agree with you there. It didn't really feel like he fit in what they were trying to do. But they're losing games, and they were losing games when he was trying to fit in. So it's not – I wouldn't say it's his fault. I do think I liked his impact in that second half, especially early on against Clemson. He hit probably the biggest shot of his early pick career there when he pulled up for three in transition. I thought that was a gutsy take. But he got the place on fire and he drained it in a big moment. So I still, I'm bullish on Dunn. I think he's a guy who, as a veteran, those kind of guys you need down the stretch and you need right now, and you've lost four straight. You need him to come into work and show up and practice hard and not give in like bad teams would do in the first few years of Capel's tenure. So they need vets right now. And I think Dunn is going to prove to be effective down the stretch here.
George, you're a wonderful man, and I'm glad you were able to achieve a life dream of yours by meeting Bob. And I also like the fact that you disagreed with limits, because I do all the time, and then he comes at me.
He likes to come at me, too, by the way.
Thank you, George.
Thanks, all right, George. Have
Thank
a great day.
Appreciate it. You too.
What a nice man, huh, Bob?
Very nice man, yeah. Very, very astute on this team and basketball in general. I honestly think there are too many teams being – I don't think there are enough good teams to field 68, by the way. I just don't. I look around and I see teams that really don't belong.
Well, thank God there are right now, because Pitt's the last four in.
They're talking about
ESPN.
Potentially expanding the tournament too, adding another four teams.
Oh, of course they are. Just let everybody in and give everybody a trophy at the end. Maybe a little ribbon to say that they participated.
Or a pin.
Or
you got in, a nice little pin.
All right, let's move on to a subject of great interest around here, and it has been for a while. The one-of-one Paul Skeens card, and how an 11-year-old in L.A., opened a pack yesterday, and he has the card. How much will it be worth? What would we have done? What about these other one of ones? What happens now? All of that. The general. It's Jeff Patton. We call him General Patton from the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. It's time for Starkey's Card of the Week from the Baseball Card Castle. Contests run every Wednesday through Friday at noon at the 93.7thefan.com contesting page. And the general is on the fan hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC service for over 50 years. General, what did you make of this, and how rich is this kid going to be? I guess my real question is, would you sell now and take the money, whatever the money might be, or wait for the card to appreciate?
Gentlemen, good morning. Appreciate you having me. I think it's no question. I love cards more than anybody. You got to sell it. It's a brand new card. Card's 10 weeks old, $1 million. We've kind of lost sight of how much money that is. That I'm selling the card.
Is that what it's worth right now?
How much?
It's gonna go for more than $1 million, because there's gonna be somebody somewhere inside this industry or out who wants to be a part of ownership of such a story. You're buying the story as much as you're buying the card. That thing encapsulated the sports world for 10 weeks. There will be somebody that pays $1 million plus for that.
Yeah, but
card.
How about if he wins 2 Cy Youngs in the next 3 years and that card goes up in value?
It very well could, but I would tell you what I would do is I would sell it. I'd give, don't forget, a portion of it's going to go to the IRS. That's the other, everybody talks about this, like, would you take the Pirates offer? Even if
Why
you take,
do they have to be involved in everything? Like, you got, the IRS.
No, seriously, but there are actually precedents for...
Bob, it's taxes.
That's BS.
What?
Well, I agree with Bob.
Come on now. They take enough of your money on taxes. Somebody gets a car and you got to pay taxes on it?
To me, it would be...
I know you do, but I'm just asking the question. I think it's stupid,
but
go ahead.
To be fair to both sides, I think if they sell the card, then it's monetized, right? But they actually are cases where they're charging before you even sell the item, which is really hard to say, because then you're going on a valuation.
What? In that case, I agree with Bob.
Yeah, $1 million is still a lot of money. What I would do is pay the taxes, give a portion to my wife, and then buy a bunch of other good stuff that is undervalued.
Now, do you think, General, that you can approach the Pirates and say, okay, I'll take your offer, but I want $1 million cash as well, both?
Well, see, to me, that's where the tax part comes in. I've proposed this to hundreds of people, and almost none of them thought of it, but I'm like, you take those taxes or those tickets, they're going to tax you every year on it. It's going to be $20,000, $30,000 in taxes. That has to be part of the negotiation to me, even if you do take the tickets.
General, if you held on to the card and Skeens goes on to have the type of career we have, maybe the greatest in baseball history, who knows, what would we be talking 10 years from now if you still had the card?
So here's my thinking, and I totally have all the confidence in the world that Skeens is going to be fantastic. He'll win multiple Cy Youngs in the most likely. That being said, it's $1 million for a card that's 10 weeks old. If I'm investing $1 million, I'd rather have something like a Wagner that's 100 years old or a Mantle that's from 52. I just think it's nothing to do with Paul Skeens. It's to do with you're selling off the hype. That's my position on this, is you're selling into the story. When the story fades, there's been 100 stories. When the story fades, and it doesn't even have to fade because he's not successful, that has nothing to do with it. There'll be another story, right? Jaden Daniels is percolating. Now, this was the perfect storm. And whether they know it or not, the Pirates contributed to this in a positive way, at least to this industry. When they put that tweet out, the phone started to ring. So whether they were genuine, whether it was whatever, it built this story times 10 by the Pirates showing an interest in it.
All right, General, what's the next Moby Dick, so to speak, out there? The next Holy Grail, the next big card?
This is the great thing about what Fanatics has done, Topps Fanatics, is they're so creative. You asked in the intro about the difference between the one-of-ones. I have a one-of-one. It's a printing plate. It's from Topps update from this year. So I have one of the Skeens one-of-ones. It's not autographed and it doesn't have a piece. What made this card unique was, in people's minds, Skeens actually wore that patch in a game. So that's what separates it from other one-of-ones. Other ones they just make, and they only make one of the card. They put a serial number, and those are all awesome. Him wearing that patch in a game takes it up 10 notches. That's why that one's so valuable. So we're only limited by the creativity that's coming, but that was certainly a great one.
And what's the next one out there? In any sport, anywhere, what's the one card everybody wants now?
Jaden Daniels. You mentioned that, Jeff.
Daniels is probably the one. Mm. In fact, it'll go. We had this conversation on the showroom floor yesterday 7 or 8 times. If he wins this weekend, it just continues to grow. Right, it continues to grow.
General, you're quite a... Go ahead, sir.
I would say he's the story.
All right. Now let's take a guess at the card of the week. Bob, you get the first crack.
Alex Nedeljkovic, goalie, big saves. He's won 2 in a row, so I'm going to go Alex Nedeljkovic.
That's a good pick. I'm going to go Jaden Daniels. Limits?
I'm going with my MVP, Josh Allen, who's going to the Super Bowl this week.
What do you got, General?
All fabulous guesses. We can't pass on Ned, so I'm going to put Ned in there. But that's only the secondary gift this week. The primary gift, don't forget, this business is predicated on the history of baseball. And Ichiro goes in last night with the fourth highest total of all time.
Mm. And one guy who didn't vote on him.
We think it might have been Ron.
We got Ichiro Suzuki rookie card from Upper Deck Vintage in 2001. And then I'm also going to give you a Nedeljkovic autographed Upper Deck canvas card commemorating the goalie goal.
Terrific.
Awesome.
What
Thank
a doubleheader
you, sir.
That is.
We appreciate it, General. We'll talk
Thanks,
to you
Jeff.
Next week.
You guys have a great week.
You too.
It's 11:02. Now's the time to make that call to the Buell Insurance Agency. Get help with those premiums at 724-443-5610. 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Route 19 in Peters Township. By the way, Bob, I think that Nedeljkovic scored the greatest goalie goal of all time. Most goalie goals were just a matter of you were in the area and someone accidentally tipped it in. There's been very few, and Jari has one, where the goalie shot the puck down the ice into the net. Not only did this dude shoot the puck down the ice, he did it in traffic. He took a hit and he had to avoid a guy, and it was the full length of the ice. I think it's the greatest goalie goal ever scored.
And you could tell that there was a lot of practice that he put into it. I saw a highlight tape of Alex Nedeljkovic goals that he had. He's had multiple in the minor leagues, too.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Especially, I think it's 2 in the AHL.
He's had in every league he's played.
Yeah.
He has one.
Bobby took a hit on the play.
Yeah, if he had dropped the gloves, that would have been the perfect hat trick. You know, an assist, a goal, and a fight.
Right,
because he had an assist earlier in the game.